everybody. Welcome back to Screen Heroes, episode 117. I am Derek, one of your regular weekly hosts. I have my other two lovely hosts with me, Ryan.
Hello.
And Ray.
Hello.
And we have our returning guest, Robert. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's awesome to be back.
It's been a little while.
It has. School has kept me quite busy, but I'm done now.
Education's important, kids. So,
it is.
Yeah. So this week we are going to be talking about Solo, A Star Wars Story, reviewing the film in all of its spoiler glory or not. We're going to talk news first before we dive into spoilers. Where would you guys like to start?
The Roseanne debacle of 2018.
Debacle?
Oh my god. So last night she makes a racist tweet. This morning she apologizes for it very insincerely. Then she formally apologizes for it. In the meantime, both Whitney Cummings and Wanda Sykes leave her show, and a couple of the actors pulled, and then she was canceled by 11 a.m. So, she has also since been dropped from her agency.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes.
Oh, wow. That's intense.
Yeah. So, she's lost everything.
I know several networks have started to pull Roseanne reruns of the original show, including Hulu and
Paramount.
Basically all of Paramount.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty quick acting.
Well, it just goes to show you that ABC won't tolerate racism they can't profit off of. We all knew she was a racist.
Well, you know, it's still Disney at the end of the day, so if you're too blatant, then they don't have a choice, is part of the issue there.
Yeah.
There are lots of jokes that 20th Century Fox will just pick up the show to have it air right after Last Man Standing, which is Tim Allen's show.
After he made racist comments a few years ago.
So, you know, that'll be fun. That'll be fun.
Yeah. I never watched the new Roseanne. So
I didn't either.
I watched the first couple episodes, and it was pretty funny.
The thing is, her supporting cast has always been amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And the show is great. Back in the 90s, I watched it and I adored it. And I want these people to have good work, and I like seeing them together. The thing is, like, she didn't just screw over fans here or herself. She screwed over lifelong friends, people she's known for 30 years. And now they're out of
a
job.
They aren't really doing much.
Yeah. I mean, John Goodman will always have work.
Right,
yeah.
And Sarah Gilbert always has a place on her talk show, her daily talk show, but
and recurring role on Big Bang.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
But, yeah, a couple of there's a few of them that are on Big Bang, recurring.
But it's not like Lacey Gilbert is really doing it, or Lacey, God, I don't even remember her name. I'm sorry, it's not Gilbert. It's not.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, the whole production is shut down. And when you look, you know, think about what goes into a TV show, you've got multiple writers, multiple crewmen, set people, costume people, just the crew in general that clean up the set whenever there's some crazy happening on the show. There's just a lot of people are involved. And
a lot of people lost their job today because she couldn't just be nice.
It is unfortunate for all of them.
Very.
Okay, well, in similar, none of this is similar, I guess, but in other TV news, I guess the only other TV thing we have to discuss is The Walking Dead.
Yes, Andrew Lincoln said he's retiring from the show. Not acting, just leaving the show after season 9. So.
Also just in, The Walking Dead is going to be ending at season 9 because nobody cares about the show without Andrew Lincoln.
They killed off
and Chandler Riggs.
Yeah, I was going to say they killed off Coral. And without both of them.
Spoiler alert.
That happened, what, a season and a half ago?
No,
maybe
that
two
happened
seasons
like
ago?
2 months ago.
Did it really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
That was very recent.
That's what we get for not actually watching the show.
No, that was really recent.
Four, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was about to say I dropped it a while back.
No, I have not dropped it. It's gotten to be a little bit rough, but I still enjoy it for the most part. But nobody, well, I shouldn't say nobody. The majority of the people that watch it are probably not watching it to see Norman Reedus, and he's apparently the one that they're making the lead of the show. But his character has always been a side character and has the personality of a side character and will not be a good leader, and I don't see a world that it's going to work in.
You're kind of... Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
I was saying, you're kind of a lifer when it comes to shows, because you're still holding on the arrow, too.
Yeah, when I... Gosh, if I get stuck in a show in the first few seasons, then I'd try and stick with it. I'd always hope that it's going to get back to its former glory, and I just have trouble giving up on it.
Do you think Fear the Walking Dead will continue?
I don't know. Honestly, I stopped watching that one. I need to catch up on it. But this season, Morgan left The Walking Dead to go to Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. So there's been people thinking that they're going to meet up after season 9 and Fear the Walking Dead will go away and become part of The Walking Dead. But who knows if that'll happen or not.
Interesting. It'll just be Walking Dead year round.
Fear the Walking Dead was like the opposite of The Walking Dead, where it was a little rough in the beginning, but then has since gotten better. And me not watching it has nothing to do with the quality of the show. It's just the sheer amount of shows I'm trying to keep up with.
It's too much.
Yeah. But, it has gotten better. So, I mean, I don't think the viewer numbers are anywhere near what the actual Walking Dead show is. So, it wouldn't surprise me if it went away.
Fair enough.
But we'll see, I guess.
All right. Well, then on to movie news.
Shazamgate 2018.
Shazamgate!
Last week we talked about the official, not really official, but the drop of the first, we think is official thing that Zachary Levi shared on Instagram.
It's official promotional material. Right,
they haven't released it officially.
Yeah. I mean, it's on a billboard somewhere. Right,
but where? Because there's nobody taking pictures of the billboard.
I'm sure it was just at an event.
Yeah, it was like a convention or something. But in any case, everybody's taking the picture from that and making memes out of it, and it's the so best great. Thing ever. It's the most excited I've been for the DCEU ever.
They're the happiest memes I've ever seen. Like, they're so good in nature, and I love them.
But even the director is sharing them. Yes. Like, he made his own.
I think my favorite one is, it's the BVS photo of Batman and Superman facing off with each other. It's all dark and gritty, and way in the background is Shazam drinking whatever it is.
Oh, I love the Black Adam one where it's switched.
Oh, yeah.
It's The Rock doing it. Like, I am here for this.
Yeah, those are pretty fun.
It's good stuff.
I'm really looking forward to that movie.
I think those are actually... Nobody seems to be doing it in, like, a way to make fun of the DCEU.
Just good fun.
Yeah, it seems like it's good-natured fun, which we haven't really seen anybody do with the DCEU lately.
Not really.
It's been mostly people ripping on it or the people that just live and die by it, you know, swearing that it's good and nobody else understands it, but...
You got to be able to have a good sense of humor about yourself the fact that Zachary Levi is able to share these types of things and, you know, everybody else with the production is cool with it. Nobody's making a big deal out of it is good. That's how it should be. Like, this is a lighthearted character. It should be a bright, lighthearted type of movie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And people are enjoying this. So steer into it.
Right. You know? Absolutely. They need to bank on this and like make all their posters have a white background so that people can easily chop it out and put in other things, you know?
That'd be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's fun. Similar DCEU adjacent. Zack Snyder has announced what his next project will be. If you don't know who he is, he was the director of Batman vs. Superman and part of Justice League.
And Jim's like Sucker Punch and the Dawn of the Dead remake.
I actually don't mind. I'm going to be honest. I don't mind the Dawn of the Dead remake.
I really like that movie. Oh my god, I saw that movie four times in theaters and I was the only person who laughed at the dead baby.
Sarcastically. Sucker Punch, calling that gem is being very, very
generous. It's a visually interesting movie.
Sucker Punch
visually, yeah.
But... is what I imagine. Like, I don't know if he knew how bad Sucker Punch was for women. I had men tell me that if I ever cosplayed that, it would be legal to rape me. Like, I don't know if he understood bad, like, Sucker Punch just was for society. Like, it really was his masturbatory fantasy come to life.
Yeah, he literally wrote it. And that movie made everybody understand that he should not be a writer. Like, he was just directing things that other people have written.
Fair enough. So he has signed on to do a adaptation of Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, which is a giant monolith thing that will be perfect.
Is it a graphic novel?
His storytelling is not.
Okay.
It is not a graphic novel.
I don't think it'll be going well for him then. So. Although it is something somebody else wrote, so we'll see. If he's the one that adapts it, though. That's true.
It's an interesting story, so I'll be curious to see what it looks like.
Yes.
But it does kind of lend itself well to Snyder's kind of large scale complex storytelling that he likes to try to do. It's sometimes successful, it's sometimes not successful, but this story definitely is in that vein.
I'll be curious to see what Jesus imagery he'll have in this one, because he literally has it in every movie. There's always a Jesus imagery in every one of his movies. Some character that's either in the crucifixion pose
Dr. Manhattan and Superman. Like,
and that's not really his fault. Like, Superman's kind of had that type of archetypal. Dr.
Manhattan he really has.
Dr. Manhattan was definitely a choice.
Yes, that was clearly a choice. That one was a choice. But Superman's, even though he was created by two Jewish guys, has always had that archetypal thing in our lifetime.
Not like... like masturbatory type imagery on the screen, on the big screen.
Superman Returns has some of those moments.
Mm. Okay.
Just saying. The only other modern Superman movie. So. All right. Well, anyways, that's Zack Snyder. Finally, on the other end of the superhero spectrum,
Jamie Foxx is going to be the new Spawn.
Super excited.
I'm really excited for that.
Academy Award
winner. You know, it's a big, deal, big casting.
And I'm excited for the opportunity to actually do Spawn well. Because let's be honest, let's be honest, they had the opportunity, but
I actually
know that this is going to
again, yeah.
But I like the original Spawn
as a movie.
So Michael J. White and John Leguizamo were fun. They were good actors. The Violator was frightening, and Spawn was, you know, a very intimidating kind of character. However, the CGI just wasn't up to snuff, and that like all the scenes in hell were just awful to watch. My god. Like,
it was a little before its time, you know, the technology wasn't ready yet.
But the technology was ready for other fun things. Space Jam was also done around this time, and it looked pretty seamless as opposed to, like, Space Jam looks like an Oscar award-winning film when you compare it to Spawn.
But Bugs is supposed to look like a cartoon. The devil's not. Like, that's the difference, right? Like, Bugs looked like a cartoon, and that was what he was supposed to look like. You didn't want a realistic Bugs.
God, that would be the worst movie ever.
So, I'm not sure that
there's
that's
a lot of people that have made realistic Lola Bunnies, or whatever her name is, since then, since Space Jam came out, because apparently that made a lot of men realize their sexuality at a young age. their furry sexuality, maybe, in this case, but...
Are you speaking, like, autobiographically?
Reddit is a dark place.
Reddit is a dark place. I discovered today that I am the only one at my office who knows anything about My Little Pony.
And whose fault is that?
I mean, it's my own fault, really.
That's true, because when I watch the show, you're like, who's that character? What's she doing?
It's engaging, it's colorful.
So you're going to watch the new Thundercats show then, huh?
No, My Little Pony's animation is far and above what that Thundercats
It's engaging and colorful, I'm
That's
sure.
That's not, no.
That's not, no.
Look, John DeLancey and Weird Al are in My Little Pony, and if it's good enough for them, it's good enough for me.
What if they're going to be in the Thundercats show?
Oh, then he'll have to do it. he'll
have to get back to me if they decide to do that. Because then they might know something we don't.
That's probably true.
So, all right. Well, that is it then for our news segment.
We rolled through that pretty fast. We better talk about this movie a lot. Yeah.
Well, before we dive into spoilers, we'll go around and kind of give our spoiler-free take on the film. What you thought of it, that kind of thing. Ryan, spoiler-free, quick take?
Okay.
Every time you look at me, like, we've never done this before.
Because you always start with me, and this one's a tough one for me. I have trouble separating the Star Wars fan in me and the critic in me, and I honestly walked out of the movie blown away. I don't know if it was because I walked in with such low expectations of the movie, but as a Star Wars fan, I really, really loved it. There were some pretty huge problems with it that that we'll talk about, but I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm sad about all the hate it's getting online.
Spoiler free, to play off of that, I agree. I'm kind of disappointed that it's getting a lot of hate, because I didn't have low expectations, but I had reserved expectations. I'm just like, okay, well, let's see where this goes. I was really, really happy with it. I actually went back and saw it a second time in 4D, which was a lot of fun.
They're close 4D.
Seriously, it's a good movie for
4D. It's the water spray I don't like because I wear glasses.
Do you want to ride in a spaceship?
I don't want water spray. That's what they did in It, and it was really frustrating. Everything else is great.
Where's Stormtrooper helmet?
Because I've done D-Box. I love D-Box. D-Box is a lot of fun, but they're not spraying water on my glasses in D-Box.
Well, I think it's worth it. I thought it was a lot of fun. But anywho, I thought the movie was really, really well done, I thought. I loved it as a Star Wars fan, and, well, almost being forced to be a Star Wars fan because my brother is a super Star Wars fan.
He really is.
I loved it, and I want to see more.
I have to completely agree. This was probably the movie I was looking the least forward to out of all the stuff that
we all were. On our prediction thing, yeah. We were all like, this movie is going to flop, it's going to not be good, and everything, so...
I loved it. I think just from an enjoyment, spectacle, sit-down, rewatchability, this might be my favorite Star Wars movie. And I say that not being a Star Wars fan. Getting into it because of the podcast is really when I've, like, gone back and watched all the films and everything. And just, like, I want to go see that movie again. I want to watch it in, like, 6 months in on my couch. I want to watch it next year, like... This is just very rewatchable for me.
It's definitely as a Star Wars fan, it's my favorite since Return of the Jedi, for sure. So,
nice.
Like, I would agreed. Not question that.
Amen to that.
Well, we seem to all be on the same page.
Which is sad, because I was hoping somebody would hate it.
I mean, so for those who listen to the show, and of course you guys probably remember, I was really not interested at all in this movie. I wasn't, like, upset about it or anything, but I just...
You called it the most unnecessary film of the year.
I did.
And I wouldn't argue with that still, though, at this point.
And I will say, kind of in a retrospect thing, because I wasn't anticipating people using the unnecessary, like, angle in actual reviews of the movie. Because let's face it, every movie is really unnecessary if it's a fictional story, right? Yeah. Like, if you're trying to do a documentary, you're trying to tell a real history story, those can be very necessary and important. When it's a sci-fi fantasy film... Nothing's necessary, right? Okay? As much as you might want it, that's not necessary. So, yeah, it's unnecessary, just like every other comic book movie.
No, you're right. When you put it in that perspective, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's not the perspective that reviewers are coming from.
No, but I just...
We can wait.
We'll get into that. But, I was pleasantly surprised. I enjoyed the hell out of this movie and just had a fun time. I walked out of it just happy. And feeling really good about it, which was just great. It was pleasantly surprising, like I said, and I felt so different compared to The Last Jedi. So let's dive into details here. We're going to do box office numbers. So this is your spoiler warning now, so you can pause while we go over the box office numbers. I will say that if you haven't seen it, you probably just should. I think it's definitely worth seeing. I think we can probably agree on that.
Oh, fully agree.
Yeah.
And especially growing up as a Solo fan. Oh, yeah. That was my favorite Star Wars character. So, anyway.
Yeah, so box office stuff. Couple of things. The movie has not done great. I don't think it's done bad enough to be considered a flop, necessarily. It did cross $100 million on the four-day holiday weekend, if you include Memorial Day.
Which broke a record, because Memorial Day is historically bad for movies.
But that record was pretty sad. It's not a big... I think the last one was The World's End, Pirates of the Caribbean, or something like that. So it's not like it was a really hard record to break. But yeah, it was true.
But you're right. It is a bad weekend.
It's all about perspective. Like, Memorial Day sucks for movies. Everybody is doing other things. They do not go see films. And, even giant blockbusters like the third Pirates of the Caribbean film didn't perform as well as they could have at another weekend. So
it's basically averaging about $20 million a day if you break it down. It made $84.5 million over the three-day normal weekend plus, and then $103 million. On the four-day weekend. It added about another 70 internationally, so it's almost to 173, so by the time you're listening to this, it probably would have cracked 180, which means it'll crack 200, by the weekend, I would imagine.
Probably.
Its competition, it still has a lot. Deadpool still made over $50 million. Infinity War still made over $20 million. People are still going out to see those movies, so there's still a lot of competition. For Solo, let's not forget that this movie also came out less than five months after The Last Jedi, which makes it the quickest turnaround for a Star Wars movie ever. I don't think anybody was really prepared for that.
I think the Memorial Day weekend was just proof that Disney did not have faith in the movie at that point, and so they released it on a weekend where they were really only competing with themselves. Well, I guess Deadpool 2 isn't them, but still a Marvel property. So, I mean, I... it's not super surprising to me, but I think that this will change the course of how they do their releases now, and they won't do summer releases on Star Wars movies anymore. They'll go back to just doing winter, like, December releases, probably.
Which will be smart.
Yeah, and they have a big gap now, because Episode 9 is not for basically a year and a half. It's a December 2019, excuse me, release. And so we've got plenty of time for that one, which will be interesting to see how things go. From a budgeting perspective, it is the most expensive Star Wars movie ever made, mainly due to all of the reshoots that were required for it when Ron Howard took over. So it hit $250 million is the estimated reported budget for the film.
The original was much smaller than that.
Yeah, it was not supposed to be that big. I mean, Rogue One got $200 million. Force Awakens was the big one at $245 million. Even The Last Jedi got less than that. So this was not intended to cost $250 million by any stretch. But when you reshoot nearly 4 months of work, that's going to cost some money.
Yes.
So there it is. That's kind of the details on that. So where do you guys want to start with the spoiler-filled review?
Well, we should start on Corellia.
Oh, definitely.
Where the film starts.
Okay.
Lady Proxima was hilarious.
And she looked practical, at least sunlight came in, which was good.
Yeah. Ron Howard shot most of the stuff with, I believe a lot of, at least the armatures were practical, you know, it was a combo, you know. I don't think he built
She looked rough when the sunlight came in.
Yeah.
A little bit.
But, and like started burning her or whatever, mm-hmm. when the CG kicked in, mm-hmm. it started looking rough. But yeah, when it was just her in the water or whatever, it was very cool, I thought.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the hybrid CGI model is kind of the big thing right now, which Star Wars has kind of been using for the last couple of films.
Absolutely.
Especially with K2 and Rogue One. Yeah, I mean, the opening actually is my least favorite part of the movie.
It was the least interesting part, I think, but it was necessary to kind of set up the film.
Yeah, I think the movie immediately gets better after he and Kira are separated from each other. From that moment forward, I like the movie a lot more.
You're not the only one. A lot of the critics are complaining about the whole Act One, basically, and how it ran.
I didn't think it was horrible. I actually kind of enjoyed them showing the construction of starships.
Yeah.
So I thought that was a nice touch, and just kind of the overhead shots of the city, mm-hmm. wherever on Corellia. I thought that was cool. So it had some nice visuals there to sort of show some of the underbelly, I guess you could say, of the Star Wars universe.
I think one of my favorite parts of the entire film is the fact that it focused on the other dangers outside of the Empire. Han even joins the Empire just to get off of Corellia. So, you know, we're shown a completely different side of the Empire by not showing us much of it at all. And by focusing on the crime syndicates, on how just crappy a planet Corellia is, and all these orphans running around trying to, you know, scrounge up metals and stuff just so they could eat the next day. Like, I don't know. I enjoyed that part of Star Wars, and maybe I'm just a little exhausted with the religious aspect of everything and
how archetypal it all is in the Skywalker saga.
I could see that.
You know?
Yeah, definitely.
Because it was pretty right on the nose all the time, and this one very much wasn't like that.
No.
How did you guys feel about the Emperor recruiter giving Han Solo his name?
I thought it was a little on the cheesy side. Yeah. You know, just a little bit. But I don't know. It could have been worse. I mean, it was not needed.
That part bothered me a lot, because there's so many other things you could have gone with. Han by yourself, Han alone, like, any of those could have been suitable last names. Why Solo? No, I wish that was his, like, born surname.
I wonder if it wasn't something that was just, you know, added to purposely be cheesy. Like, they were just saying, yeah, we're just going to go super cheese on this.
Like, you think he should have Kevin Smith winked at the camera? Like,
what about you, Ryan?
I think it was the worst, like, most unnecessary thing since Bones in the new Star Trek movies. Where it's like, my wife took everything but my bones. You know? Yeah. It was, they both have a terrible, like, just let it go. You know, do we really need to know how the name came about? Like, come on.
25 minutes, Ryan makes a Star Trek reference.
Get the jar, I'll give it a dollar. But, yeah, as far as Corellia, I didn't really get to say anything about Corellia, but, it, I've played it as a guy that's played a lot of the games in Star Wars, right? That's where a lot of my love for Star Wars came from. I've seen Corellia in several different games, and it was really awesome seeing it on the big screen. It brought a big nerd smile to my face. Like, it looked just like it did in the games and like it did in my mind, having read the books and everything. So I really love the way Corellia looked. And for me, that gave it a little bit more of a pass on the slightly boring first act, because it wasn't really boring for me, because I was like, ooh, Corellia freighter, ooh, Corellia starship. You know, like, there was a lot for me to take in there. And so I was okay with it being a little boring, because I didn't really feel that way as much.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It did look really cool. And that's one of the things.
It's not something you've really seen in Star Wars before. No. A place that's so run down. And they talked about how the orphans were going for portions, which is a tie-in to Rey and The Force Awakens. How many portions can I get for this droid? And, you know, things like that. So there was some consistency there that I liked. And there was a lot of very small things in this movie that were like that, that I really liked, that tied into the larger universe.
Agreed.
Yeah, very cool.
I wouldn't necessarily call it boring. I think the movie just kept going up and up and up.
There was a lot of people that did call it boring. That's what I was referencing. Yeah. Not necessarily what you guys were saying.
Well, earlier when we were saying that, like, it was our least favorite part, I think that's, at least in my opinion, it's because the movie just accelerated for me and got better and better. But I still really enjoyed Corellia, and I love just a villain that's easily taken care of. Like, Lady Proxima is a fun character now that we have. I want to see, like, cosplayers do it now. I want to see the 501st bust out Lady Proxima now. I'm waiting for those.
Get on it, guys. I found that first part to just be kind of awkward. Like, you know, there's that part of me that wants to believe that, like, that was shot first and was, like, saved footage from the original version of the movie or something, and the actors just weren't quite comfortable yet, or Ron Howard was just better with them later on. I don't know, but it just didn't gel for me until the time jump, basically. When it's 3 years later, all of a sudden everything just felt settled and a little bit better.
So let's move forward to the 3 years later, and he is...
Well, he saves Chewie. We find out how him and Chewie meet. It's kind of not as climactic a life-saving effort as I thought it was going to be.
Really hoping I could actually see Chewie eat somebody?
Weird thing that they were like, okay, they're implying that Chewie was literally killing and eating people in this pit. Like, okay. Like, that's not Chewie that I know. You know?
Yeah.
That was a really weird thing for me.
I guess when you're starved, you'll do a lot.
Sure, you know? And they were forcing him to do it. Yeah, but again, it's also like, why isn't he eating people late? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, if you're...
Well, maybe because he's not forced to anymore.
Yeah, I guess. It's just a weird, like, personality shift. Like, he's instantly able to go from being a killer beast that is murdering and eating humans to a guy that feels bad about killing a porg and eating it in The Last Jedi.
Other than the pork scene, we don't really see our main characters eat food in Star Wars movies.
And right, eating really portions, don't. Like, that's it.
Like, yeah, so, like, we never really saw Chewie eat in the old movies. They never had Jabba a meal. Eat. We saw Jabba, right, but, like, our main core group, right, the Skywalker saga group, we never really see them eat.
I don't remember, you see Yoda breakfast. Eat. But he's not a Skywalker.
That's what I'm saying, like, Luke, Leia, Han, Chewie.
No, and he offers Luke some food.
Yeah.
You see Luke eat in A New Hope, and you also see him eat in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So and drink.
So never when they're together. It's just when they're together they don't eat.
Yeah.
It's, okay.
They're too busy saving the galaxy.
I do want to bring up, and this started from the very beginning, it was throughout the whole movie, that was a big negative for me, was the cinematography wanted to be awesome, but was not. Like, they needed to turn up the brightness.
Yeah.
If they had adjusted the brightness, it would have been... awesome.
Everything was way too dark.
That first scene there's, I can't even remember, when they're, like, running through the tunnels. It's literally dark, and you see, like, some little lights, and other than that, you don't know what's going on, and I don't think that was, like, an artistic decision that's a part of the storytelling or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if they were doing it to add mystery to this scene or whatever, but I don't think it added anything to it. And the whole movie was dark.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it had a really westerny feel overall, but because it was so dark, it was kind of like Zack Snyder's sepia filter, right? Where it takes when you get the bright colors, it adds to the universe. If we had those colors in this, it would have added a lot more. But
I agree.
Hopefully, we get the colors. Fix it. We get the colors later.
You get some. It's still pretty dark. Like even throughout, like
which is disappointing when they're on considering the... how they marketed it with those bright posters and everything.
Yeah. Well, because when you see Kira later, when you're on Paul Bettany's ship.
Dryden Voss's.
Thank you. Yeah. Yacht. That's all very bright and colorful and stark, you know.
But then you go back to the planet where they get the fuel refined or whatever, and it's instantly dark again on a planet that's like a desert planet. So, I mean, there's like a weird imbalance going on. And so I guess maybe it's not through every single scene, but it is a theme throughout the movie that isn't like a storytelling theme.
It didn't add anything. In fact, it took away in most scenes, so I agree with that.
Like they need to move away from whatever the cinematographer was for this one.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah. But, sorry. I mean, maybe you don't agree, but...
No. I didn't really notice, I guess.
I guess we can talk... Go ahead. Okay, no, fine.
I was just about to say, I agree. No, one other issue I had with the cinematography, I enjoyed the dice coming in. I just thought they were a little overdone.
Yeah.
Okay, well, if we're going there, then I'll just say that I think it's fucking ridiculous that every single thing that we needed to know about Han happened in a, like, 2-week period. Like, we were curious about where he got his blaster, we're curious about the dice, we're curious about where he met Chewie, we're curious about how he got his name.
It's 3 okay, years.
Okay, the name was 3 years, but...
And the dice.
But almost everything else happened to him in, like, this very short period, and... You know, don't the you Kessel have, run and all these, you know, there's so many things. It's like,
don't you have life identifying things happen to you in a short amount of time?
That many?
I don't know. I think that's just possible. That's just movies, though. Like, when you look at any of the other Star Wars films, like, think of how much happens.
But they also set up for a sequel. It's like, we don't need to, if you're going to end your movie on a note that's setting up for a sequel, or they said they plan a trilogy for it, so, you know, or trilogy. You don't need to explain every single thing about the character. What do we have left to learn about Han at this point from the original trilogy that's a mystery for everybody?
Well, I think
there's
some of it
has not
to,
anything.
I think some of it has to do with they didn't know how the movie was going to be received, and while they might want to do 2 more movies, if this movie doesn't make any more money, they may not continue with that plan. Right, so they needed to kind of throw everything out there, like they used to do with films in like the 90s.
Yeah, like it ended like it could be a standalone movie, but they left it the potential for more movies.
I mean, think about it this way: if it wasn't a prequel, if it was just a new movie, we wouldn't be second guessing all of those little things because we don't know that they matter.
Well, here's the best part about their business model now: to do a, you know, canon inline numbered trilogy movie, and then in canon anthology film, they can wait for DVD and Blu-ray sales with this one before they make that call, before they have to start filming. They get that luxury. Whereas, you know, maybe Marvel wouldn't necessarily have it. They might have to move on to a different property or something if one of their movies didn't make the money they expected. So at least they have that.
Yeah, and since there's very little actor crossover, you know, they don't really have to worry about making movies at the same time, but... You know, Marvel does.
Yes.
Right. No, I just this movie I think is a good standalone movie that wants sequels, but it doesn't necessarily purposefully give you one.
See, I don't know if I agree because like nothing was solved in this movie really. It was like the story didn't really wrap up everything like his relationship with Kira, which is like the crux of the movie. Is not wrapped up.
Well,
it's left on an open-ended note where she's like working for this spoiler alert Sith Lord.
Well, by the way, that's different than their relationship, though. Their relationship is pretty tight.
Right, but she just told him, "I'll be right there," or whatever. I'm grabbing these jewels, and then he just left.
Okay, if somebody told you, be like, "I'll be right behind you," and then you watch them just abandon you?
Yeah, her ship leaves. Like that's it.
Right, I'd be like, but that's not wrapped.
All right, well,
I mean, he knows that it's over, and then he knows that it's over with her. He gets the Falcon at the end from Lando. He wins it in the card game. You know, and he flies off in the sunset with Chewie. Right? Tobias is dead. You know? So, like, it's over. Everything's tied up nicely, actually, at the end of the movie. Yes. The universe continues. Those characters still continue. Because they didn't die. They're still there. But the story's over. Don't you think?
It can be.
I would be happy with a continuation. I would be happy if this was a standalone film. Mainly because I got what I wanted out of this and a ton more than I expected. So I'm satisfied what they gave me. However, Kira is the most dynamic female character I've seen on screen in like 5 years. Her storyline is so interesting. I want to see her become a crime syndicate boss out of just the need to survive. You can tell everything she's doing has like a little bit of, you know, adrenaline rush. Like, she likes it a little, but she's also regretful a little because of how, like, seedy she has to be. And, oh my god, like, she is just so interesting. I want a Kira film now.
She's a survivor.
I've never watched, or I haven't watched Game of Thrones yet. I still intend to, so I'm not familiar with the actress. But, like, she was really great. I really enjoyed her character arc, and not just her as far as the women in the movie go, but yeah. Enfys Nest, when that reveal happened. You know, there's a lot of people talking crap on it, and they're like, it's 2018, we're not surprised when a woman is a powerful character. But it's like, in Star Wars, we really haven't seen that. So for me, it was a big reveal to see this girl looks like she's 16 or something, which was a little weird.
The age was what caught me off guard.
But yeah, I mean, when I did not expect that, and you know, I think whatever that reveal was supposed to be, it worked for me, and I'm excited to see some more from her too. She's one of the founders of the Rebellion as we know it from the original trilogy. So you know, I thought that both of them were great, and I would love to see more from both of them for sure. Yeah, I had a big disconnect with Han in this movie, and that was a problem I had with it. But with her, she wasn't a character I knew already, and so yeah, I'd be much more excited, especially the fact she's working for, you know, the big Darth Maul, you know, reveal. Yeah. Makes me very excited. I would love it if they went in a direction that focused more on her and less on Han, personally. But
I agree. And to your point about Enfys Nest, like, it's not just that she was a woman; she's a person of color too, and. Let's face it, Star Wars is really white for the most part. Millions of people in this galaxy, and they all just happen, like, all these women just happen to be white with beautiful brown hair, and they all look like they came out of the same family, the same gene pool. So it's really cool to see other-looking characters. It makes it more interesting to me. I was immediately more interested than if, like, a white dude had taken off the helmet. Like, oh, well. I see those every day.
I was hoping it would be Nicolas Cage, but...
Sorry.
Make him canon in the Star Wars universe.
You're always going to be Nicolas Cage.
Is he just playing himself?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. So Nicolas Cage is in the Star Wars.
I want Nicolas Cage.
Do you have any thoughts on Kira before we move on to, like, Tobias and Val and the Arduinian?
Sure. I mean, I wanted to talk a little more about Chewie's story.
Well, let's talk Chewie then.
But Kira, I thought Kira was absolutely fantastic. I'm a big fan of Emilia Clarke, so
yeah.
Like, I was really excited to see her in this movie, and I thought her character was really interesting, and she's got like the coolest stuff that she wears in this movie.
Yeah, like, it was very like 20s, not quite flapper style, but like it had some fashions that we've not seen in the Star Wars universe before, which I was really like, a big fan of.
It was like futuristic 20s.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
I thought it was more like the 30s with the gangster style and the mob wives, like the way they look.
I do want to say the throwaway line that she did about how, what's his name? Dragon taught her
many things.
Teres Kasi, specifically.
Oh, yes.
I looked at Derek and I looked at my girlfriend next to me and I was like,
like the video
is
game.
Is anybody else excited about this? because that was the first, in the movies at least, because I haven't watched the cartoons and whatnot. Ian would be a better one to ask that to. But in the movies, for sure, the first like canon validation that that's a thing. Because sure, there was the game that I bought a PS2, I think it was, or PS1, whichever, to play.
You don't still have that, do you?
No, I know you want it. But
can't find that game anywhere.
It's not that good. It was awesome when I was a kid.
It's not the point. It's a Star Wars fighting game.
It is. And it's not canon also. But I think that was the first acknowledgement in any I know that was the first acknowledgement in any of the Star Wars movies.
Yes.
That it was that it's a canon thing. So I was so happy. I wish you would have looked at me because you would have seen a huge smile on my face, like hoping somebody else caught it too. But and she's not the only one. I think somebody else mentions Teres Kasi later on.
I think so too. I thought I heard it twice.
But that was a huge high point for me in the movie.
Well, that whole fight between her and
that was great. Dragon
was pretty cool.
It was not. We haven't really seen like a lot of martial arts type, and so this is a Star Wars specific martial art. You know,
especially when it's not Jedi.
Right.
There were no lightsabers, no Jedi, no Sith. Just two like non-force sensitive people fighting, which you never get to see, and that was kind of cool.
It was really cool.
And to be fair, we don't know that Dryden is not force sensitive of some kind, but yeah, it's not shown. He's not using it as a character.
He doesn't use it at all, and he gets skilled.
He does have vibroblades, which is interesting. But
yeah, I did like that they're supposed to be. I would think so.
We haven't really seen him much in the movie universe.
It was like a way to be like, these are kind of like lightsabers,
but they're for normal people that can't handle a lightsaber. For normal people. Yeah.
But no, the Chewie thing I wanted to talk about earlier was just that in my head, you know, Chewie, the whole talk of Chewie kind of owing a life debt to Han, and that's why he is around and things like that. I guess I always assumed it was going to be a more epic kind of life-saving event.
Saving him from the slavery of the Empire isn't a life-saving
that's
event.
What yeah, yeah.
But here's the thing. He didn't save Chewie to be the nice guy. He saved Chewie to not die.
It's a life debt.
I know, but that's
But at the same time, they built a relationship. They became close.
Yeah, it wasn't love at first sight. They developed it, okay?
Although I will say that Han speaking Wookiee was great.
Oh, I loved it. That was awesome.
It was ridiculous.
So good.
Yeah. I want to like that scene.
Really? You didn't like that?
It's because it was so ridiculous. Because humans can't make those noises.
Well, that's what made it funny, because he was doing it.
But what that means, though, is Chewie shouldn't understand him. It's like when you bark at your dog.
But at the same time, if you read the subtitles, it was broken.
Yeah.
It was really broken. So
he's obviously communicated with Wookiees before. So.
Yeah, I know.
So
it just didn't
work. He was able to do enough to get his point across.
So we talked a little bit about this with Ian. Over the weekend, I shot Casa Couture, and so we discussed a little bit about the Wookiee storyline on Kessel and freeing them from it. And Derek and Ian discussed that they thought the Wookiee who he met up with
was the one from the Star Wars Christmas special.
No.
I'm pretty sure it was, actually.
With a completely different species, because its face had no hair. And we all came to the fan theory canon that it was because he was so malnourished it might have just fallen off.
Probably. Because he looked super skinny.
Yeah. Well, all the Wookiees on that planet looked really tiny.
That Wookiee looked fine when it got out in the daylight. It was in the caves where the lighting was really bad, where I thought it looked like a totally different species.
Okay, that's Lumpy from the Star Wars Christmas special. Tell me that that's not the same Wookiee.
That's not.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's Lumpy.
It's not.
That's his name, Lumpy.
Who was the actor in that? Wasn't there a famous actor who was that?
Who played Lumpy? I don't remember.
Not you.
I would need to know the name of the character.
I'll look it up while we talk about it.
I did get a kick out of it, though, when Han was like, "Hi, I'm a friend of Chewie's." And he patted him on the head. I'm just like, all right, that's cute.
I mean, I love Wookiees, right? Like, I would love to see a movie with a bunch of Wookiees and then just subtitles. I'm fine with that.
That's what I want. It's like a whole Kashyyyk film.
That would be awesome. Right? Just like in that prequel when they actually showed the battle on Kashyyyk, I was sitting there going, Wookiees! I was all about the Wookiees.
Yeah, and honestly, the dynamic between Han and Chewie was really great in this movie, and I feel like they gave us a lot of it, but they should have leaned on that more, because that was the most believable, probably the most believable relationship for me in the whole movie.
They did it really well, and, you know, for Alden, he's a newer actor. It's not easy to act against something like that, and I thought he did a really good job. I thought they just worked really well together.
Yeah, there was. I mean, the chemistry was there. The same chemistry that I felt like Han and Chewie had in the original trilogy. So, I was good with it.
All right. So, other characters. I guess we have L3.
L337.
My new favorite droid.
L337.
Crack me up.
There was like a lot of little like elbow jabs to people in L337. If you are familiar with like early 2000s gaming, was Leet Speak was what it was called. It was a gaming subculture of language where you would replace E's with 3's and T's with 7's, and it was like the Elite was shortened to Leet, which was L337.
Yeah.
And so the fact that the droid was named that was a funny thing to somebody who lived through that time period and played a lot of games. I think that droid was a little overcooked, if I'm being honest. Like, it was funny, but It's the same problem we had with Rogue One, where this droid is so much more advanced than anything from the original trilogy. How does this even exist? Why are they even using R2 units and protocol droids like C-3PO. They have droids that can move like a human way better, you know, as good as or better than a human, and are way smarter.
The C-3PO thing is weird, because, like, if you think, oh, well, Anakin built him as a kid, then it makes sense. But when you realize that there's other ones of him throughout being used by, like, the Empire...
And not only that, Anakin built him, like, way before this movie came out. So it's...
So, like, when you see, like, the silver one or whatever, you're like, well, why is this still being used when... L3 is an option, because if you say, well, L3 was made 20 years after C-3PO, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense. But yeah, no, you're totally right, it's a consistency problem.
The concept of the social justice droid, the SJD, if you will, was definitely funny in its own right, but I think they went a little overboard with it personally. Like, it was funny and I still laughed at everything, but I don't know. I guess I didn't find the droid quite as charming as everybody else. I did think it sounded like the actress that plays Captain Phasma is who I thought voiced it, because Gwendolyn Christie, because they sounded...
No. There are similarities to their voices.
Yeah, I mean,
Phoebe Waller-Bridge.
Right, I know it wasn't her because my girlfriend looked it up right after the movie and told me. Just she to thought
you wrong?
No, she thought the same thing. She thought it sounded exactly like Gwendolyn Christie, but...
I liked what she was doing as a character, because... It's something that's overlooked in Star Wars that we've talked about before, where you basically have this giant sub-slave culture going on that nobody seems to have a problem with, you know? And
except that once she is, you know, no longer alive and functioning, they basically enslave her in the Millennium Falcon at no choice of hers.
It's a weird thing, right?
Yeah, because it's a little bizarre.
You're supposed to be like, oh, it's cool, she lives on the Falcon, but then it's also like... Cool, she had no choice about that and is now stuck in the Falcon.
And it's also, you know, the throwback to the line about the Falcon having a unique voice or whatever later on in the...
A unique voice and something about an attitude.
Yeah,
or
an attitude
like that,
in the original trilogy, which I could have totally done without if they had just not done that. But, yeah, I mean, that's a weird thing. I don't really understand. You know, they were trying to go... Also, it's like they were making fun of social justice warrior type people.
Yes.
Which is kind of weird.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I mean, all the jokes were made at the droid. We weren't laughing because...
But she was successful.
She wasn't making jokes.
I thought it was also just kind of a jab at all the people who were like... when they announced Jin, and they're like, we get it, guys. You want another woman. Like, this is ridiculous. Star Wars is about dudes. And so I thought that was what it was really just... All the people have said that there are women in this galaxy. Finally.
Right, but did you need to make a whole character? That whole their whole arc was
she's
just to
here and
stick
she's
it
gone.
To the fanboys. You know, I mean,
she's here and she's gone pretty fast.
She seems satirical. I mean,
yeah, a little bit,
but not in a bad way. Like, I thought it was trying to make a point. And
I don't know if I could have dealt with it for the rest of the movie, but at the same time, I thought K2SO got a little annoying after a while
too.
Like, you're cynical. Like, that's the problem with droids. They only give them a one-dimensional personality.
And there's no consistency between, like, the technology levels in any of the movies, which is a problem.
That's bothersome.
We've really only had, what, 3 droids that could talk?
That can speak,
like English?
English, common,
right?
Whatever they call it. Yeah.
So that's it. That's all we've really had. Everybody else is beeping.
Well, there's a reason
there's
a reason why C-3PO knows however many languages he knows to communicate with all these different droids, because apparently... Only, like, 2 other droids in the universe that we happen to have movies about speak English.
So, but that's kind of my point, though. So you end up with, like, these characters get exaggerated personalities because they're speaking for all droids.
And they only have one-dimensional personalities, you know?
But, yeah.
C-3PO is the neurotic one, and K2SO is the cynic, and L337 is the, you know...
Revolutionary social justice droid. Yeah, no,
so
it's true, and only one of them survived a single movie.
But
so.
He also had somebody else to work off of. We didn't have to listen to him the entire time. And let's face it, out of the original droids, nobody says C-3PO is their favorite.
So I gotta ask, how do you guys feel about Lando and L337 possibly boning or whatever?
I thought it was hilarious.
Whatever, I'm fine with it.
I mean.
Derek has told me on multiple occasions he would screw a robot if he could.
That is not what I said.
Wow.
I am paraphrasing.
Okay.
To make
me sound as bad as humanly possible.
It worked.
Thanks, hon. Asked him if he would ever have sex with an android, and he said
that's
yes.
That's the clip for our advertisement, by the way.
Android and generic robot, not quite the same thing.
Well, there are...
Droids are somewhere in the middle,
even. Here's the thing. there are sex robots right now. They can't consent, therefore it's not really fair.
Wow. But... can a thing that's not sentient...
It's the joke, okay? Like, my point is...
my car doesn't consent to taking me to work, either.
All right, so we haven't talked at all about Woody Harrelson or...
Yeah, we got several other...
Or Paul Bettany.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we need to.
Cause vision looked weirder.
Huh?
Tough.
Nothing, never mind.
You say vision?
Or...
Yeah, that was...
That was not a good joke.
So, Dryden Voss. So, the things on his face...
I didn't know he was going to be in this, Paul Bettany.
No, I had no clue. He wasn't in any of the promotional material.
He was a recast.
Oh, okay.
He wasn't in the original cut of the film. I'm drawing a blank on the actor's name who was. I apologize. But when they were restarting production schedules, that person was no longer available due to a scheduling conflict, and they had to recast the character.
They went the right direction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So as far as totally your question about whether there were scars, it's tough. And it's just like the Star Trek universe and Star, you know, all any of these alien universes, it's tough to know if they're scars or if, like, it's a, like a Worf scenario, a Klingon scenario, you know, or something along
those
lines.
Were you born that way? Or
yeah, is that like a genetic trait? Because there's a lot of creatures and races in Star Wars that have, you know, tiny little things that are different, just like in Star Trek, tiny little things that separate.
This is so weird for me. This is surreal. We've been doing a Star Wars podcast, and Ryan has three times brought up Star Trek.
Well, I mean,
it's well, comparable.
Yeah,
it is.
I
mean, very comparable.
I haven't brought up Star Trek.
You haven't. No,
I'm filling it in for you right now.
You're not wrong, and that's
I'm not talking trash on Star Trek too. I want to make it clear.
I know.
If those are scars, that's a huge character development. Right. You know, if something just scratches the crap out of your face,
I'd say it's probably not scars if I had to guess, but I don't know of any races in the Star Wars universe that have facial features like
But then
that,
again, so we're constantly seeing new races that you've
even
never seen.
Even in this
before.
Movie, there's whole new creatures, which I thought was awesome, by the way. There was a lot of just new stuff in this movie.
But it wasn't as annoying as in The Last Jedi, where you could tell they just wanted to make toys.
The throwbacks, to the original movies in this were done, I thought, in a way that was more tasteful than it has been in previous movies, where it's like in your face, it's like, look, this is the same character as Yoda, or, you know, something like that. This one, they were like background characters. You know, you saw Rodian. Is that I think that's what Greedo's race. In the back,
the
you haven't really seen a lot of those. You know, and there's some other creatures. Like in Rogue One, you got the guy that chops off, gets his arm chopped off or whatever. In that one scene, he says, I don't like you, or something like that as a throwback. It's like, come on, we don't need that.
There's no reason that guy should have been on that planet.
It's like it's just pure fan service. And they had fan service in this one. I think the big difference with this movie for me is that, and the reason why I like it more is because it was like a love letter to fans versus like...
It wasn't insulting.
Yeah, no. I don't know what I was going to compare those to, but this felt more like a love letter to fans than like an in-your-face reference fest like a lot of the other movies have felt.
I think Rogue One, they probably just were nervous. They're like, well, this is the first Star Wars movie that's done during the era of the original Star Wars movies, so we have to throw in as many references as possible to show them that we understand when this movie takes place.
But this one, they were clearly nervous about this one, too. So.
Yeah. For totally different reasons, though.
Sure, but I mean, it's still, there's still nerves on it. I don't know. I think that the way they did it was very respectful, and it made an original trilogy fan feel very good about the way they handled things that I love. So,
definitely. So we are getting close on time, and there's two major topics I still want to talk about. They both involve Lando, so we haven't discussed Lando at all.
We haven't.
So, how do you guys feel about him?
I loved Lando. I thought he did an awesome job, and at times he actually kind of sounded a little bit like Billy Dee Williams.
Yeah,
like
I
he
heard
actually
it
got
too.
A little bit of the voice going. So I was impressed, and just the cockiness of him was pretty cool.
I love the acknowledgement that he always said Han instead of Han.
Yes.
So funny.
To hear him say condescendingly, like, because it looks like a mistake. It looks like they never pulled him and Carrie Fisher aside and been like, okay, no, this is how you say it.
Yeah.
And here, it's perfect. You know, like, a name is really all you come in and leave this world with. So if somebody disrespects you by purposely pronouncing your name incorrectly, then that's huge, you know? That's so insulting. So, this was great.
I didn't love Lando as much as everybody else did. I felt like he was doing a really good impression of Lando and not... Like, I never bought into the character. It was the same problem I had with Alden as Han Solo. I just felt this disconnect. Like, I just could not associate them with the classic character. And it's a problem with me. I get that. not with the movie. They couldn't do anything about it. But I felt like he was just doing an impression of Lando and not actually acting. If that makes any sense, I don't know. Like, acting is kind of doing an impression in general, but.
I mean, I get where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like they were basically coached to be those actors, right? Be Harrison Ford, be Billy Dee Williams.
Well, Harrison Ford was on set, so I mean, advising for his own character. But yeah, you might be right. You're probably right. Just they probably did a little bit.
And for the record, that whole story that came out that Alden had to have an acting coach because he was so bad—it's not true. They had an acting coach for him and Donald Glover so that they could mimic the performances as much as possible. So it wasn't like because they sucked. It was because you really have to do this in a correct way, and it still wasn't enough for some people.
Yeah. I mean, I still think they did a good job, but yeah, you're right. They wanted to coach him because these are beloved characters played by legendary actors, so.
Who have their own mannerisms, their own tics, their own onomatopoeias, everything that comprises them as people.
Yeah.
So you get two big pieces of information. You get the card games.
Mm-hmm.
That was cool. And you get the Kessel Run. And so
which I thought was completely unnecessary.
I wanted to talk about both of those. So how do you guys feel about the being two different card games where Han has to basically beat Lando at his own cheating game in order to win the Falcon?
I will say, as somebody who's just, you know, has a brief understanding of everything based on my limited knowledge and not diving into the expanded stuff, I liked how neither one was presented in the way that I thought. This entire time, I thought the Kessel Run was just a simple race. And I thought that we were going to watch, like, one hand of poker and that be it. And the fact that it sorry. Like, before this. Oh. No. I knew what the name of the game was. I was making, like, before this. Fair. This is how I went into it. No, you're good. I like that it was presented differently. And, you know, let's face it. Most of the Han and Lando interactions come from those two scenes. So you get a lot of characterization in just those two scenes, and that's nice for me.
I like that it was two different games and not just the one game, because I was like, you know, I don't really need to see Han win in a card game, get the Falcon. Like, I believe that it happened, but that's not how they did it. It wasn't just a normal game that he won. There was, you know, Lando's cheating, and then Han finds out that he's cheating and figures out how to cheat back, and, you know.
He didn't cheat back.
Well,
he
just
stopped him from cheating.
Okay. Yeah. He still did it in a deceptive way by stealing the card from Lando.
Right. So that he couldn't cheat, yeah.
Right. But I'm just saying.
That's not cheating, though.
No, but he stole something from Lando.
True. But they're all, I mean, they're smugglers and.
Which is why I said they both did deceptive things in the game.
They're smugglers, they're scoundrels.
Right. And so I like that because it showed them on somewhat equal footing. They're both very good at their own game, right? So I thought that was a fun experience. And it gave the two characters a chance to talk. I mean, I know it was a lot of kind of exposition type things, but it was a good excuse for it.
No, I mean, I liked the games. They were fine. They didn't really stand out as my favorite part of the movie. But yeah, there was some good character development between the two of them. Good interaction. The Kessel Run, though, I didn't need to. It was cool, right? Like, but it wasn't what I pictured, and like Rachel was talking about, and I don't think it was really necessary to show the Kessel Run. I think there's a different way they could have done taken the story, right? It didn't have to be the Kessel Run in this story.
Which, I mean, and I agree, you didn't have to have it, but at the same time, I like how they portrayed the Kessel Run as not just a race.
Mm-hmm.
Because why would a freighter just enter a simple race? Let's be honest, it's not a racing vessel.
Because it's the fastest ship.
Okay, fair enough. But still, I like that there was a little more to the Kessel Run than just a simple race. That's a personal thing, but I kind of liked it.
I like how it wasn't actually 12 parsecs either. That it is a good round down. And, like, that line was fun for me.
Which connected to The Force Awakens when they said, 12 and a half. 12.
That's good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of somewhere in between, where I like what the Kessel Run ended up being, but it did kind of seem very shoehorned into the story.
I like just seeing Kessel. Like, that planet was awful. Who wants to live on that mining planet surrounded by a constant storm? The air looked poisonous. I don't know. Like, just this air of sulfur. I have no idea why there weren't dead bodies everywhere. But,
might as well have been.
Right?
Because they're aliens.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Yes. Quite.
But I liked what the Kessel Run was. I appreciated that they finally explained it. Because let's face it. In the original movie, it was a mistake to say 12 parsecs, that was just an error, and they've managed to retcon it over the years and fix it, and I appreciate that, you know, because mistakes happen, and there's cause to fix some of them, not all of them special editions, but I liked the Kessel Run.
At least they can, because no one's fixing 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, which is, you know, a length and not depth measurement, so... Literature joke.
But,
let's talk Maul. Ray Park and Sam Witwer were back. Ray Park did it in Phantom Menace. Sam Witwer has been voicing him in Rebels and Clone Wars, and so... seeing him back, no longer a Darth, he's just Maul.
Just like that, that's how you have to say it.
I don't know how to do the voice, I don't have testicles.
Just stuff. Maul, like, I'll just call him Maul, I was going to do a voice.
Maul was really cool, it was fun to see him and his robot legs.
Yes.
It's a risky operation.
Totally wow. Worth it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, it was definitely cool to see him. I'm sure it was a surprise to a lot of people because I would imagine the average fan doesn't watch the cartoons. And may not know that he's still alive.
The surprise for me was that he showed up.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think, I would imagine the average moviegoer just assumes he's been dead.
Yeah, they were probably very confused.
Right, so like, then all of a sudden here's Maul, and yeah, he's got robot legs, but maybe you didn't notice it because you weren't looking. Like,
I had no idea. I wasn't even paying attention because I was more concerned with who's under the hood than what their legs are.
Right, so for me, I've seen Clone Wars, but I haven't seen Rebels, and so I didn't know he went from his spider legs to like relatively normal robot human legs, so that was surprising, but interesting to bring him back in, especially have it be Ray Park, because that implies that they have plans for the character, but
well, yeah, the Obi-Wan movie,
right? Mm. But the problem with the Obi-Wan thing is the way Rebels handles Darth Maul and Obi-Wan. So
what, you mean where he dies?
Yes.
But that doesn't happen until like right before A New Hope.
Right.
So they have 9 years of time.
Of more fighting. I know, but it does, you know, you have to be careful of the context of that final fight versus, you know, where he is now.
I don't think he'll struggle with that.
Final fight on screen. Like I've seen clips of it. In Rebels, and animation's great, but I still want to see it acted out.
Foot Sorella Guinness is not going to be doing that.
Well, it would have to be McGregor.
I mean, but obviously in the cartoon, it was Sir Alec Guinness looking Obi-Wan.
Not Ewan McGregor.
Well, you just age him up.
Yeah. Dye his hair white. No one's going to even care.
Yeah, you just age him up. I mean, that's fine.
You say that, but you know Star Wars fans. So.
They're so toxic lately. Like, yeah, you can't please them at all.
I think fans in general are toxic lately.
You're not wrong.
Well, Bruce Wayne 25 was very excited and surprised to see Maul.
So was I. Yeah. And so, like, the whole time he was on screen, I was, like, trying to pick everything apart and take it all in and figure everything out. And so I looked at his lightsaber, and I was like, that is not the same lightsaber he had in Phantom Menace. So I went and looked it up, and it's the same one that he has in the TV show. Nice. It has, like, a cool claw over the end. And I actually liked the way his lightsaber looked in The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
Because it was the first time seeing a double blade.
Everybody liked it. That scene was just the coolest.
But when you get into, like, some of the games and stuff, specifically, like, Star Wars The Old Republic, where there's a ton of different skins for the double-bladed lightsabers, there's a lot cooler designs out there than what we saw in The Phantom Menace. So seeing one that had some other, like, little extras on it was really cool. And the fact that they kept it in continuity with where he was in this time period and what he was using. Although there was no reason to show it, that was completely unnecessary, except to make sure you could say a lightsaber has ignited in every Star Wars film.
I'm not sure, like, don't get me wrong, like, I'm sure somebody had that thought, but I saw it more as just, like, making sure everybody knew that it was Maul and not just some other person that looks like him.
Okay.
I completely forgot about the great scene with Darth Vader in Rogue One. I was trying to recall where that was.
Yeah.
My God, that was the best.
It's one of the best scenes of any scene of any Star Wars movie. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unnecessary to the plot, really, but
but it was. We've talked about that scene, I'm sure, but.
And see, in this film, Darth Maul is unnecessary to the plot. He really is, but hopefully. It's not unnecessary later.
He was, I can see that. But, I mean, also, he was kind of necessary for if they were going to set up a sequel.
Yeah, exactly.
It was clearly, like, more of a stinger scene, like what they do with Marvel movies. Absolutely. But I was okay with it. I did not expect it at all, and it I was super excited. I came out of the theater with a huge smile on my face after seeing that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, to your point, you know, if this was an MCU movie, that would have been a mid-credit scene.
Yeah.
Right, but Star Wars just doesn't do those, so they had to have it in the
movie. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
We did stay.
Just in case.
Yeah, I did the first time I went.
Just in case.
But yeah, so if you if you haven't seen it yet, you don't need to wait.
There's no post-credit scenes.
Fun cameos by Warwick Davis and Clint Howard as well. Clint Howard's older brother of Ron Howard, and Ron Howard has put him in all of his movies. Mm-hmm. You know, just
Warwick Davis played the same character, I believe, in The Phantom Menace when during the pod race.
Oh.
He was up by Jabba somewhere. But, yeah.
Anthony Daniels was in the movie, too. Not as C-3PO.
Anthony Daniels was the Wookiee. Was his Wookiee friend. That's who I was thinking.
Oh, okay.
Wumpy?
Yeah.
No. So then, okay, Smaller, so that's...
John Favreau. I didn't realize John Favreau was in the movie.
Yeah, he was a little four-armed alien.
Right, I did not get his voice from it.
Arduinian.
Yeah, I did not recognize his voice that's exactly, at all.
He had some great lines in the movie, by the way.
He was fun. No, like, I knew, like, I'm like, I know this voice. It sounds so familiar, but I couldn't place it.
So. Yeah, because he doesn't do a lot of voice work, so it's not like I went, Happy Hogan!
Right.
Fair enough.
I do want to say, too, that I think it's interesting that when you look, I'm going to bring up the DCEU again. When you look at, like, Justice League, where they had troubles with the director and had it switched in the middle, and everybody's like, what was a Snyder scene? And what was the other Whedon scene. And, you know, they're like, we want the Snyder cut and everything else. There was nobody really going, what was a Ron Howard scene and what was... although you did mention earlier that you think that maybe some of the early scenes were from the
original. I'm only thinking that because...
It's possible.
Because it's just because they totally feel disconnected from the rest of the movie. But it would also not be fairly normal for the beginning of the movie to be shot first. That's pretty rare, too. So I think it's just... It just feels disconnected for me. So because I know there are other directors I'm making that leap... Ron Howard got the sole director credit, which means, you know, he had directed, they said, like, at least 70% of the movie ended up being his, which is not the case for Justice League. It was much more split in Justice League. So, you know, it's difficult.
But the fan base are just as passionate for the two, although they aren't passionate about the guys that directed the Lego movie, probably, as they are about Zack Snyder.
Yeah.
Because he's a polarizing filmmaker in general anyway, so that's probably a lot of it. And so is Joss Whedon, really, this
You're not
age.
Wrong.
Yeah.
Well, and if I'm wrong about the beginning of the movie being the other directors, then it's difficult to tell what seems out of place in the rest of the movie. The rest of it, like it or not like it, none of it seems like it was made for a different film. Whereas Justice League just has a lot of back and forth tonal shifts and stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, the solo film also had the advantage of them holding off on the trailer until everything had been reshot.
Yeah, so you didn't get a bunch of random scenes that never made it to the movie.
Because most of the original Justice League trailer doesn't exist in the movie.
Right.
Almost all of it. Right. So there's a lot of that too. People can analyze and find out, well, this isn't there, what replaced it, and that type of thing. Solo just doesn't have that because they waited till the last minute to release anything promotional,
which I think hurt him too, but.
And it might have. I mean, we talked about it a lot that, like, we didn't have posters, we didn't have teasers,
trailers,
nothing,
yeah.
You know. So, but that's what it is. I think the movie is much better than people want to admit that it is. I'm not entirely sure why people are hating on it so much.
It's because they keep saying it's unnecessary, and to an extent, I agree. We don't like. Han Solo, you said he's one of your favorite characters, right? And I get that. He's cool. But do we care about that much? Like, do we need, instead of, like, Obi-Wan, right? Who is somebody that obviously has an extremely storied past. Whereas Han in the original trilogy, you're just like, he's a smuggler with a really cool ship, and he's really fast and a good pilot. But whereas Obi-Wan is like, he fought in the Clone Wars, and
but
he
we've
did
seen
all
of that, though.
Yeah.
Like, that's already done.
Right.
So what do you have for Obi-Wan? You've got, well, he's on Tatooine now.
Whatever happened between episode 3 and episode 4, there's obviously a big shift there.
But I guess for me, an Obi-Wan film, a Boba Fett film, a Yoda film, a Han Solo film, Rogue One... It all seems about the same to me. Like,
I would agree.
Right? It's just which is more interesting to you as a person.
Yeah.
Right? Do you want the war movie? Do you want the smuggler movie? Do you want the alien Jedi movie? Like,
I want the Ahsoka movie.
Okay, there you go. There Ahsoka. You go.
I just like the fact that it was another, because you didn't see, while Vader was in Rogue One, there wasn't a lot of, you know, Jedi Sith interaction, as much as the standard Star Wars movies, and Solo was even less of, you know, that it was more, I don't know, common people in the Star Wars universe. That's who it's centered around. So that I think that's why.
I'm not taking that away from it. It's actually something that I really loved about the movie was that it was such a small, it felt like a smaller movie than everything else. And like even the final fight happens in somebody's office. Like it's not a big, you know, climactic battle like it is in everything else.
It's not even with our main character.
No. And so.
Well, and the stakes are so much lower.
Yeah.
Right? Because you're only talking about like if everything fails, then like these five people die, not an entire planet or anything like that.
Yeah.
So,
well, I guess it could have that coaxium went off.
Right. What's the problem? What's the thing with the fuel now, by the way? Like, fuel was never mentioned in Star Wars until The Last Jedi.
They had to come up with something.
When they had to, like, just go like this for an hour. But then in this one, it's like, fuel, guys, fuel, fuel, fuel.
I think they're just, they're trying to explain things.
I guess.
With more detail.
They needed something to smuggle, right?
There's so many things. Spice, right? Because
but that doesn't have the same kind of punch as, A, it's not going to explode.
Well, spice only because explode. It's not 1400, Ryan. We're not concerned with spices anymore.
Oh, yeah, clearly.
The white people have taken that already.
I'm just saying, like, there's other things that exist in the Star Wars universe that aren't, like, starship fuel or whatever they're using this fuel for. You know, that would have been fine.
Sounds like portions would have been great.
I would have been okay with portions. They're trying to feed Corellia. They're trying to feed Corellia.
That's what I would smuggle.
The social justice droid would go back and bring all the food.
When you bring in food, you've changed the tone of what's being smuggled.
Because nobody eats in Star Wars?
Because now you're taking food away from people who are going to die.
I'm not really okay with food. Like, there's other things that exist.
So fuel...
Kyber crystals or, like, all, you know, these other things that are very rare.
Kyber crystals aren't needed in massive supply.
Sure they are.
If you're building a Death Star.
Yeah.
So the Empire has all of those, right? Like, that's the thing, right?
Well, the Empire was trying to get all this fuel too, so what's...
But they're not involved in any of this.
Not directly, but who do you think all that was going to go to, all that fuel? I mean, it's... We don't know. They showed in, like, The Last Jedi, you can't trust anybody because everybody's working for everybody, and, you know...
Well, yes.
And so it's entirely possible that all this fuel was going... Because obviously the Rebellion wanted the fuel... Right at the end, that's the whole thing. So it stands to reason that the Empire would probably want the fuel too.
Well, they were stealing from the Empire on the train.
Yeah,
right. But my point is more of like fuel and kyber crystals. What's the difference from a story perspective?
Because they've mentioned kyber crystals before, and fuel is just like a random thing that they started bringing up.
Except that everybody understands the concept.
We're debating
fuel.
Something kind of stupid now at this point. Right. I feel like
Woody Harrelson was great, guys. He was a really good one and done character.
He was fine. Yeah, like I don't know. I found his like spinning of all the guns and stuff really annoying and unnecessary.
It's a western.
Yeah, I don't know. Okay, I'm kind of funny.
Reach for the sky.
Stop. No.
I was just quoting Woody.
Shut that down, Rachel. Shut it down.
I was quoting the other Woody.
Oh, God. All right, guys. That's where we end our podcast.
Well, no, it's not. We have to give our ratings.
Okay.
Ryan, rate the movie.
Probably a B.
Yeah?
Yeah. Probably right.
It's your highest rated movie this year.
Yeah. Probably. I mean, I really enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. And it was... much better than all the other
Star
Wars
movies.
It had
every right to be.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Not a perfect movie by any means, but I think it doesn't deserve the hate, unfortunately, that it's getting.
Robert?
I would, you know, only because of a few nitpicky things, but also still kind of high because, which may be a little personal bias, because growing up he was my favorite Star Wars character, I'd give it an A-.
I'm also going to give it an A-. Which is my highest rated movie of the year.
I am also going to give it an A-, actually. Wow. I'm back and forth between a B+ and an A-, but I really loved it. I think it's the best of the four Disney Star Wars films, and it's definitely better than the prequels.
Mm.
It's always going to be difficult for me to put anything above the
Empire.
Original Star Wars and Empire because of what they are. You know, I loved it. It was a lot of fun. It was really enjoyable. I thought it was really well done in general across the board. And I hope that they do get to do more with this. I do. I want to see these characters again. I want to see this cast again. So,
agreed.
If you haven't seen it and you listened to all of this, you really should. It's definitely worth checking out.
Let it fail. We want Disney to keep making the Star Wars story movies.
Yes, we need more Star Wars movies that aren't
more episodic.
Skywalker centered.
The Skywalker saga
or Jedi in general.
Or Jedi in general, yeah. It's nice to see the different sides.
Or these Jedis.
We need another Death Sphere for them to blow up.
The fifth one. So.
Yeah.
That's the next solo movie. They're going to blow up a not Death Star. It's going to be a Life Star. It creates planets of Jar Jar Binkses, and they have to destroy it.
Fantastic. That's your new pitch.
Yeah.
Pitching a Star Wars movie.
Jar Jar Binks.
No, specifically Jar Jar Binks. Yeah, they clone him.
All right. Okay. That is going to be it for us. We are the Heroes Podcast Network. You can join us live every Tuesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/heroespodcasts. What are we doing next week?
Oh, my God.
What do we want to adapt next?
Really?
Is the topic. Is yes.
that? Oh, that okay. Is the so, topic. Yes, we're going to be talking about.
This one's
going to
make me do some work.
Yeah. Comics, TV, movies, or books, everything that we would like to see on the big screen in the next few years.
Fantastic. And we've got some more movie reviews coming up, of course, as well, with things like The Incredibles 2 and Jurassic World, Ant-Man and the Wasp. We'll be covering those. And we are going to be starting a new segment called
Let's Rewrite It,
and we're doing the DCEU starting with Man of Steel. We will be rewriting movies to make them what we would have preferred.
This is a Screen Heroes thing.
This is a Screen Heroes
nobody
thing.
Told me about. Did I okay this?
Did you miss did. The meetings? You
apparently the I did not get invited to the shareholder meeting this year.
Well, just like Roger Goodell, you voted, and that's that.
You guys can no longer kneel on the podcast.
So, yeah, we have opinions. Anyway, so join us next week for that. Ryan, where can people find you?
Buster Props.
Buy his stuff. It's good stuff.
It's really good stuff.
Thank you.
Robert?
KC Vigilante on Instagram and Facebook.
Hire him for your kids' birthday parties. He dresses as a cowboy.
It's true.
Yeah, it's a cowboy. It really is. He's just a cowboy.
He's a specific cowboy.
I have other cosplays, from the DC, too. But that seems to be my most recognizable. So I embrace
you
it.
You named yourself after it, so
yeah,
of
I did.
Course.
Well, that's why, you know, it's so recognizable. I just embraced the character.
You should. So.
Ray?
I'm Siren Ray. Support me on Patreon. I need to eat.
Fantastic. I am the Star Trek dude. You can find me on Red Shirts and Runabouts and Gamer Heroes, two other podcasts on the network where we talk about Star Trek and video games respectively. Thanks for tuning in. We will catch you next time.